Dear friends, it is a very great pleasure, a delight to be with you all in this lodge of which we have all heard. And I thank you most heartily for your very warm welcome and affection. You all know that the Theosophical Society was started under the auspices of certain great adepts who inspired the founders to work in this direction. In their letters to A.P. Sinnett, they make it clear that they are not interested in particular individuals. Sinnett and Hume perhaps thought that they were specially fitted to receive instruction and fresh knowledge because of their education and background. But the Mahatmas explained to them that they were not concerned with any individuals. They are deeply interested in the world as a whole. They spoke about making this attempt in order to help the orphan humanity. And I think we must not forget that the Theosophical Society exists for this purpose, to help the world. It is not a society which is meant for the delectation, the benefit of a few individuals. We all exist as members of the Theosophical Society in order to do such things and live such a life that humanity will be the better for it. And if we are to fulfill the aims of the society, it is important that we should be deeply concerned with what is happening in the world or what is happening to the world. The world has lived in such a state of prolonged crisis that we forget that there is a crisis. There is the possibility any day of a war which will be much more lethal, deadly than the previous wars, because every day the powerful nations of the world with all their immense resources are working towards producing more deadly weapons. A few years ago, Brezhnev said that the weapons they are now working on are so dangerous that the nuclear weapons which already exist appear to be comparatively harmless. they are exploring the possibility, for example, of opening windows in the ozone layer of the sky. If they succeed in doing that, everything below such a window will be totally destroyed. Not a blade of grass will be able to survive. Can we say that a new war in which such things could happen is impossible? We cannot say it. We are on the brink of it all the time because there is such great competition, such mutual suspicion, so much fear and hatred in the world. We know there is more and more frustration, and there is growing violence everywhere. So the increase of violence, of hatred, and the corresponding increase in the armament production, all this is part of the crisis in which we live. There is also the fact that vast areas of the earth are under dictatorships. In these areas, millions of people are living in a state of degrading fear, with the possibility of being whisked away at night for expressing differences of opinion, for not thinking as the state desires them to think, and also with the possibility of being tortured, of being treated as lunatics, and so on. Those who live in free countries are perhaps not quite aware of how the others live. In such a large area of Europe where there is no freedom, in practically the whole of Africa and the whole of South America, in so many countries of Asia, in all those places where there is no freedom of opinion, no freedom of thought, no freedom to write as one would wish, even on apparently harmless subjects. 2 years ago, I was in one of these countries where there are a few persons who are interested in theosophy. They cannot, of course, be officially members of the society. It is not possible in these countries to meet together as we do here. They had to invent some reason. They said that it was the birth anniversary of one of the persons in whose house we met. They could not all arrive there together. They had to trickle in one by one. And the blinds were pulled down. The telephone was put aside. And the doors and windows were shut. And we sat together in a small circle with about 10 people speaking about theosophy, Indian philosophy, and so on, Adyar. Harmless subjects, but they had to speak about such subjects as if they were conspirators. And the same thing had to be repeated in another part of the city, in a different house, with a different group of people, because it's too dangerous for the same group to meet in the same place on two consecutive nights. But this is only a mild example of the tyranny under which they live, a tyranny which makes it impossible for human beings to explore their all the potentialities of the human spirit, its range, its depth, its subtlety. So there is this problem in the world. Over a vast part of the world, there are other symptoms of the world malady. The fact that there is enormous affluence in certain countries and there is tragic poverty and suffering in other countries. Then there is the callousness of countries where vast masses of people are uprooted from their homes, as happened recently in Cambodia, to be forcibly planted somewhere else. There is the immense cruelty perpetrated on animals. And apart from all this, there is the personal suffering of human beings, the loneliness of old people, the sense of isolation and alienation of individuals who feel caught in a growingly complex mechanism, the over-organization which results from industrialization, the quarrels at home, the anxieties, the insecurity of the young. There are so many forms of suffering and of accentuated suffering in the present day world. And as members of the Theosophical Society, if we are concerned with the objects for which the society was founded, then we have to give our heart to all this. We cannot live in a small circle, indifferent to what is happening. But that is what happens to most of us. Our daily life, month after month, year after year, is spent in thinking about what is happening immediately around us. Such petty little events and incidents as touch our own lives. And there is hardly a thought for what is happening to the rest of humanity, to the rest of life. Occasionally, we may look at a newspaper or read of some incident and say, what a pity. It's too bad that people have to suffer like this. But it's nothing more than an item of news. Once again, for example, people are dying of hunger in the famine which exists now in Ethiopia. But it is news, isn't it? It's just news. It doesn't mean anything very much to us because we are so involved in our own personal lives. If we do think about it at all, we tend to think in terms of what other people should do to solve these problems. What should be the attitude of scientists, of the politicians, of the men in power? And we think in general terms. we feel that the government should act in such and such a way. And when we think in such ways, we are really escaping the question. Because it's so easy to pass on the solution to other individuals. Or we think of easy solutions. We may think of changing systems. These are not far-sighted answers to the problem. The world has always been tinkering with systems, with theories. There are so many philosophical, economic, political, and other theories which are meant to put the world right. But no theory has really worked. In fact, every theory has created a new problem. When the Marxist solution to the kind of problem which was created by industrialization was offered, it was perhaps meant well. But we can see that the Marxist solution has produced enormous suffering, perhaps much more suffering than industrialization did. There have been religious solutions which were meant to help people, but every religion turns into a new kind of tyranny, the tyranny of the church, of dogmas, of priests. And so, all these solutions which are concerned with changing ideas, system, producing revolutions, they have not worked. And those of us who are concerned with bringing about a better world, true happiness, peace, goodness on the earth must investigate and find out what is the root of the problem. Why is humanity going on in this way, century after century? External conditions change. Instead of riding on a bullock cart, man may make journeys to the moon or to Mars. But the fundamental problems remain the same. The problem of how to be happy, how to make the earth happy, how to make it beautiful, how to bring about peace and not conflict. So the world hasn't really changed. Although so many things have been tried, it is because we don't go to the heart of the problem, and that is what we have to be concerned with primarily in the Theosophical Society. It is not enough to alleviate the pain of the world. If a doctor were to give an analgesic to someone who is suffering very intense pain as a result of cancer or something like that, he wouldn't be doing much good to the patient. And all these external solutions are really of that kind. They are temporary solutions and partial solutions. We know, I think, all of us, that the real problem of the world is man's selfishness, which takes many forms. It displays itself in the desire to compete, competing in order to survive, to be better at the expense of others. We all do that individually. That is what we teach children to do in school, and that is what the nations of the world are doing. Long ago, H.P.B. wrote about this, how our entire education is wrong because we teach children competition all the time. We teach them to come out first, to be on top of the class, to do better than other children, and not really to love the subject, to learn, to find out, and so on. So competition is one of the forms of selfishness of which human beings exhibit. There is acquisitiveness. Every nation is trying to acquire the best part of the resources of the world. Not only the nations of the world, but every group of people. So there is the class struggle. Each group trying to get advantages for itself. The labor unions are doing it, and various other groups are doing that. So there is this tremendous conflict and competition in different fields in the world. There is aggressiveness, which is also selfishness. There is vanity, the vanity of nations as well as the vanity of individual. Bertrand Russell wrote in one of his books that when an individual does certain things, we regard them as crimes. But when large groups of people do the same thing, we don't regard it as a crime. If an individual kills somebody on the street because he wants a piece of land or a piece of property, we say it's murder and punish him accordingly. But if a very large group of people, a nation, wants a piece of land and slaughters millions of others for that, we do not call it murder. We may call it a glorious war, a patriotic work. And if we belong to that nation, we all feel that way. We feel the other person is wrong. So, where there is the force of numbers, a crime becomes a wonderful thing. So, we don't see that all this is selfishness. Whether it is the action of large groups of people or of individuals, it is exactly the same. Every country, every group is interested in exploiting others and in utilizing others. And when we look at all this, we can say people should not do this. People should act differently. And we always think of people as being outside ourselves. And that is precisely what is wrong with the world. Because every person, every nation, every group thinks of others as doing wrong. But we may also think in that way. But are we not sharing in the selfishness of the world? It is no use saying that we are not so bad. We don't torture people. We are not so aggressive. We are on the whole good people. But whether the selfishness is in an aggravated form or in a mild form, it is not of great importance. Because what is in a mild form can become aggravated in different circumstances. Many of us may think that we will not touch a property which belongs to another individual. But can we be sure? As long as there is greed, there is the desire to acquire things, there is the sense of possession inside, it could become some time or other, given different circumstances, the desire to steal. Suppose we were in an entirely different condition, where there is the stress of circumstances, where nobody is likely to notice us, where there is no danger at all of being shamed before society or being caught by legal authorities, would we be perfectly right in our action? It's very doubtful. If there is greed, if there is the tendency to acquisitiveness, given different circumstances, we might behave differently. So as long as there is selfishness in us, we cannot say that we are better. And that is what we think, and that is the reason why we are not concerned with eliminating that selfishness. We are so ready to point to different forms of selfishness in other individuals. Somebody is ambitious, so we say he is selfish because he is ambitious. But although ambition may not exist in ourselves, some other form of selfishness does exist when we are indifferent to what is happening in the world, when it doesn't move us deeply, when we don't feel that we have to do something about it, we are callous and therefore we are selfish. Indifference is a form of selfishness. It doesn't matter whether one is indifferent or ambitious or cruel. It's all selfishness. So there is some form of selfishness of in some degree in all of us. And as long as it exists in some manner, whether it is in the form of indifference or pride or vanity or whatever it is, then it means we too are adding to what is poisoning this world. Because what is poisoning it ultimately, what is creating the malady of the world, is human selfishness. It's not Carter, it's not Brezhnev, it's not the officials here in New Zealand or anywhere else, but it is human selfishness which is exhibiting itself through us also in so many different forms. We are, with our thoughts, our motives, our attitudes, our relationship, in a minor form or in some form, adding to that general force of selfishness in the world. If we realized that we are doing it, then there would be a tremendous sense of responsibility. We don't want to look at this fact. That is why we always escape it by giving some other answer. What is to be done about the world problem? They say, oh, we must go and start orphanages, or we tell other people what they ought to do, and so on. We don't want to look at the fact that a change has to be brought about in the human individual. And there is no place where one can start better than in oneself. If there is selfishness in us, we are harming the world. If there is absence of selfishness in us, we will be freeing the world of its pain to that extent. And if we realize our responsibility, if we realize the fact that in our daily life we are adding to the poison of the world, there would be a sense of humility and a sense of responsibility. And then we can really start to help the world, because we would not be, we would have stopped harming it. And then we can consider what is the value of our theosophical literature. H.P.B. said, theosophy is not a religion. It is not like Christianity or Hinduism or Islam or any one of those religions. She said it is not a religion. It is religion itself. It is the wisdom religion. And according to her, religion per se is that which unites not only all human beings, but all beings in one whole. And it is wisdom, we have wisdom only when there is this kind of a religious consciousness in us. The Theosophical Society could easily degenerate into a very ordinary, worldly, secular organization by interpreting its three objects in a purely secular fashion. There are so many organizations now which are promoting goodwill in the world. Even the United Nations, which is an example of disunity, is trying to do it in some ways. There is organizations like the Rotary Club and so on. So we can gather together, fraternize, be fairly nice to each other. On the whole, decent people have cups of tea in a friendly spirit and go away. The Theosophical Society could be a brotherhood organization of that kind. Or it could consist of a group of people studying religion and philosophy, comparing points, noting differences, comparative study, which in the universities and academic institutions, they can do very much better than us. They have many more intellectual, clever people than we have in the Theosophical Society. Or are we to dabble in the psychic, measure brain waves, and do all the kinds of research which so many organizations are doing, cooperate with them, sit on certain platforms, and see whether there is such a force as Kundalini, you know, create a new cult? Is this all that the Theosophical Society is meant to do? It could easily, I think, degenerate into that kind of an organization, which will be one of many such organizations in the world. It can be really of value only if it has that truly religious quality, the kind of religion which HPB spoke of as theosophy. That means that it must be concerned with the undeclared object, that is theosophy, much more than with the declared object. Or the declared object should be promoted in the light of the undeclared object. And we have to find out whether when we are studying what we call theosophy, we are really studying in a manner that frees us of the selfishness which is making the world sick and also helping others in this direction. Whether it is giving us that kind of wisdom which can bring a healing touch, which can make the world grow in true happiness and make the human spirit unfold to its greatest dimension. Is our study really doing that? We have so many study classes, lectures, discussions, but what are we doing with that? We can discuss root races, rays, fohat, all kinds of abstruse subjects, and be exactly as we are, and like the rest of the world, pursuing our own personal ends, behaving selfishly when our interests are affected, competing for holding positions, living in a state of friction with everybody. So we can do all our study, become erudite in theosophy, be able to propound various ideas, and be exactly where we are. We wouldn't be helping the world in the least. The question is, how far is the study of theosophy bringing about that change which is necessary for the world, from selfishness to unselfishness, from ignorance with regard to how to act, to wisdom, which is a question of knowing what is the right thing to do in order to let the world grow to a state of perfection. We study so many subjects. We study evolution, we study karma, we study reincarnation. What does it really do to us? Suppose we study the whole theory of karma. Does it teach us to live without fear, for example? If we really understand karma, the laws of karma, even if we understand that the world is a world of law, there should be nothing to be afraid of. Are we growing into a state of fearlessness, or is it just a theory that we are talking about? There is the subject of evolution. It has tremendous implication. Evolution means that everywhere life is unfolding in its unique and extraordinary ways. And in that unfoldment, life is showing, giving a message everywhere of its own beauty, of its joy, of the bliss, of its creative power. And if we really understand the process of evolution, we should be able to perceive the true value of everything that exists at any moment, because life is not unfolding towards some faraway future, but all the time it is part of that glorious design. And so, do we appreciate the precious quality of what is being revealed to us through the process of evolution? When we look at a plant and we see on that plant many buds, some half opened, some unopened, some in full blossom, we don't say that the bud is of no use because it has not blossomed. We don't pluck it and throw it away. We don't criticize it, nor think of it unkindly. We know that the bud is growing into a flower which will show extraordinary qualities of its own, which is unlike any other flower. But everything in life is like this. It is flowering into its own unique perfection, if we understand what evolution means. But it means that all our study of evolution hasn't really gone home if it doesn't affect our attitude in daily life, our relationship with things, our sensitivity to the rest of creation. And to a great extent, our theosophical study becomes theoretical. It does not transform us. It does not give us that quality of wisdom. It does not give us a religious insight which will make us feel at one, not only with all human beings, but with all beings, as HPB said. And if our study does not do that, if our discussion, our meditation does not bring us to that, then what is it all about? Is it one more theory that we are creating so that we can feel different from other people? That's what every religion has done. Theosophy could become another sect, another religion, which is a divisive force like all other theories. And if it does not have that living quality, it is of little use. In the Key to Theosophy, HPB says that the future of the Theosophical Society will depend on the sincerity, the devotion, the unselfishness of its members, and also upon their knowledge and wisdom. And she goes on to explain that wisdom is different from knowledge, and it is, wisdom is concerned with the experience of a living truth. And she says that it is only that living truth which can give vitality to the society. That means make it a real channel for bringing about the progress of humanity. Why should we have a membership? We can print a lot of books with the money which we have now available to maintain buildings and do all kinds of things. We can use that money to print thousands of books and distribute them at a low rate to many more people. Would that bring theosophy to them? HPB actually asked this question in her Key to Theosophy. Why not just distribute books? But theosophy cannot be communicated through cold print or even cassette tapes. It has to be communicated as something living in our lives. It has to be exemplified in our attitudes, in our relationships. We have to show to the world that it is possible to be totally free of unselfishness and to live a life of love, of understanding. Only if we do that, then we can hope to accomplish what was intended for the Theosophical Society. Those of you who have read Raymond Moody's book may be interested in noting the fact that he says that the many people whom he has interviewed who have temporarily crossed the barrier over to death experience contact with a great light, and they speak about a review of the past incarnation which takes place. This review is mentioned in the Mahatma letters and other books. And during the review, they are shown certain things. Primarily, when the individual failed to love and when he learned to love, it seems from that, as we very well know through our theosophical knowledge, that the entire purpose of life is to learn to love. We think that we suffer pain. So many hardships come to us. But these are not really hardships at all. There is no such thing as pain in the world. There is only our own resistance to the lesson which is being taught. A schoolboy who does not want to learn his lessons and resists going to school thinks the lessons are painful. The lessons are neither painful nor anything of the kind. It is his resistance to learning which makes them painful. The lessons may be extraordinarily interesting, valuable, but when there is resistance, it creates pain. And we are all like that, like unwilling school children. When we fail to learn, then we suffer. And we resist the very idea of learning. Learning means, as we said, to be able to perceive what the evolutionary process is revealing from moment to moment, everywhere. The message it is giving. To listen to that is to learn. But we don't want to listen to it. And so karma makes us wake up periodically. It gives a blow and it says that blow makes us wake up for a little while. You know that it is only when people suffer that they ask the fundamental questions. Why should there be suffering? Why am I born here? Is there God? Is there justice? Such questions arise in the mind when there is a shock. But after a time, we get used to the shock because we get used to everything and then we go to sleep again. So karma has to give a another blow, another shock, which it does in a stronger or a lighter way. And again, we have to wake up to begin to inquire. But if we were learning all the time, if we learn to love, there is no karma, because there is no need to give shocks to make us wake up. So it is the person who loves totally who is free of karma. And we have to learn this lesson in order to help the world. If theosophy does not teach us how to become totally free of selfishness, how to learn and learn to love in life, then it is of very little use. It's not metaphysics, it's not speculation. It has to be a practical regenerative force in the world, to use the word which the Mahatmas used. They said that no one who does not love humanity and who does not have a faith in the regenerative power of brotherhood is really qualified to come near them or to benefit from them. So I think when we are working in the Theosophical Society, we have to see it against the background of the true purposes for which it was founded.